आत्मा स्त्रिय पथ्य सुहृत बालमृत कोशम अंठापुरम परिविहार विवश्च रम्य भूमंडलम जलधिमे कलमाकलया कालो वशिष्ठमिति स प्रययो विशालम् Thus Dhruva Maharaj at the end left his kingdom, which extended all over the earth and was bounded by the great oceans. He considered his body, his wives, his children, his friends, his army, his rich treasury, his very comfortable palaces, and his many enjoyable pleasure grounds to be creations of the illusory energy. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas, known as Badrika Ashram. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the beginning of his life, when he went to the forest in search of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dhruva Maharaj realized that all bodily conceptions of pleasure are products of the illusory energy. In the very beginning, of course, he was after the kingdom of his father, and in order to get it, he went to search for the Supreme Lord. But he later realized that everything is the creation of the illusory energy. From the acts of Srila Dhruva Maharaj, we can understand that somehow or other, if one becomes Krishna conscious, it does not matter what his motivation is in the beginning. He will eventually realize that the real truth, by the grace of the Lord, in the beginning, Dhruva Maharaj was interested in the kingdom of his father, but later he became a great devotee, Mahabhagavat, and had no interest in material enjoyment. The perfection of life can be achieved only by devotees. Even if one completes only a minute percentage of devotional service, and then falls down from his immature position, he is better than a person who fully engages in the fruitive activities of this material world. We are reading from Canto 4, Chapter 12, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead, text number 16. The greatness of Dhruva Maharaj is very much revealed in this segment of Srimad Bhagavatam. A Rajarishi, or a saintly king, is a person who performs his service to Lord Sri Krishna without personal motivations or attachments. Athapun beard vijastreshta svarna shrama vibhaga shama. Whatever varna or ashram we may be situated in, our success is that we perform our duty for the pleasure of Krishna. If Krishna is pleased, we are successful. If Krishna is displeased, although the world may honor us, praise us, we have failed. This is the essence of understanding the scriptures. In pleasing Krishna, we live in harmony with the constitutional nature of our soul. Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. We are eternal servants of Krishna. We are not this body or this mind. These upadis, temporary designations, become the source of all miseries when we become attached to them. However, when we use them in Krishna's service, they become a great asset. They actually become the means by which we can elevate our consciousness to the perfectional stage. Material energy is one of Krishna's own energies. Therefore, a devotee does not hate material energy. A devotee utilizes material energy for the proper purpose. We have heard time and again that this human form of life is very rare. Durlabha manava janma lobhya samsari. Human form of life is like a boat, which can take us across the ocean of materialistic birth and death. Therefore, this boat is very, very valuable. A devotee honors the human life. In fact, he honors every form of life. A devotee will not deliberately cause harm to any living entity, respecting that everything is the property of God. So a devotee sees this human form of life, which is a material body, as something that is potentially very, very sacred. The difference between material and spiritual is consciousness. Impersonalists, often they reject everything that has a temporary manifestation within this world, that is ruled over by time, as being an illusion. But a devotee sees that all of these material manifestations are facilities to be used to serve Krishna and to thus purify the consciousness. Oftentimes, Srila Prabhupada would tell his disciples that he was hoping we would have long, healthy lives. What does that have to do with spiritual life? If the body is just a bag of flesh and bones, which is the source of all miseries, why should we want to have a long and healthy life? The reason is because the soul being bound to material misconceptions since time immemorial, has finally come to the human life, which is so valuable. In this human life, if we just use this body and mind under the direction of the spiritual master and the scriptures, then the body itself becomes the very cause of our liberation if it is used properly. The lower species, they cannot do that. Only a human being can give the lower species the opportunity for agyatya sukriti, or spiritual progress. So therefore, this human form of life is very, very precious. Although it is material and it is a source of all sufferings, it is also the facility by which used properly could be the cause of liberation, freedom from all sufferings. So therefore, we do not see the material manifestations of this world as maya. Rather, we see the misuse of God's property, due to the wrong conceptions as Maya. The great devotees of the Lord understand that in this world of birth and death, we can use the temporary objects manifested as vehicles by which we can personally overcome illusion, if used properly. Dhruva Maharaj, he was a great king. And the real evidence of this was not only in his life, but how he decided to leave this world. It is described he had beautiful wives, he had wonderful children, obedient children, he had magnificent palaces, very enjoyable pleasure grounds. It's actually necessary for a king to have these things. We find all great kings had these facilities. He had tremendous power, armies, influence, but he had no attachment for any of it. He simply utilized it in the service of the Lord. And when he could see that the best way to serve the Lord and his citizens was to give it all up, without any problem whatsoever, he just left it all, immediately. Just left it all behind. If Krishna doesn't want me to use this at this time of my life, then it all belongs to him anyway. Sometimes we use things in Krishna's service, but deep down inside of our consciousness, we actually believe it is ours. Anyone can say it all belongs to Krishna. But the test is, are we willing to give it up if that is Krishna's desire? That's when we are tested. So Dhruva Maharaj voluntarily, it wasn't that he was an old invalid man who could not possibly enjoy these things anyway. He still was strong. He still had great powers. But he saw that there were other people to take care of the kingdom. There was no need. The greatest purpose of a king is to give an example of how all the citizens can perfect their lives through self-realization. And that means detachment. Attachment to Krishna's service and detachment to anything material or temporary that cannot be utilized in Krishna's service. Sometimes devotees appear to be attached to certain things, but that attachment should be because it can be used in Krishna's service. But as soon as somebody else is ordained to use it in Krishna's service, or it can no longer be functionally used in Krishna's service, then there's no attachment. So Dhruva Maharaj left the kingdom of the entire planet Earth with all of its enjoyable facilities and even his loving family to go to Badrikashram. And what was it, Badrikashram? Very cold place. Very austere place. He went there to perform tapasya, to completely fix his consciousness on Krishna exclusively. This was part of the great service of a king, of a Rajarshi, to leave the kingdom behind. Srila Prabhupada in his purport is concentrating his words upon the transformation that took place in Dhruva Maharaj's life
by becoming a devotee. When he was a boy of 5 years old, it was his great burning of the heart to somehow or other attain a great kingdom, greater than his father's or grandfather's. He wanted the kingdom of the world. He was insulted by his stepmother and outraged by the insult that came upon him. When one is insulted, especially by someone who is near and dear to you, it is very, very painful. When strangers speak unkind words, it hurts. It's not so bad. But when people who are close to you, people who you exchange some degree of affection with, when they believe or speak something very ill of you, is very, very painful. Nature of this world is the deeper affection that we have with people, the greater capacity that they could cause either pleasure or suffering to you. That is a fact. If a stranger appreciates what you've done, it has a little bit of happiness. But if someone who you exchange affection with really appreciates, that goes very deep into the heart and gives pleasure. But if that same person turns against you, speaks against you, it's very, very painful. So we should understand, in affectionate relationships, what a very profound responsibility we have, especially in spiritual life. When we have affectionate relationships between God brothers or God sisters or other Vaishnavas, some trust, some love develops in our united efforts to serve the Lord. That is greatest nourishment. It's like a tree. There are so many leaves on the tree, but they are all connected because they are all connected to the trunk. Through their connection to the trunk, they are all connected with one another. And when there is nourishment to the root of the tree, they are all satisfied. Similarly, as devotees, we are all connected through the spiritual masters in our parampara. And by working jointly to please Krishna, we are all satisfied, ultimately. But when harsh words, careless behavior, when there is immaturity in evaluating circumstances involving a dear Vaishnav, hearing rumors, not carefully trying to understand what is actually the best way to serve, then so much harm, so much damage, so much pain can be created. So therefore, in affectionate relationships, there is a very, very great responsibility. Suruchi, she was careless. Dhruva Maharaj looked up to her. He had affection and respect toward her, and she abused him. How much that hurt his heart. And even more than that, his father, Uttanapada, he was the object of such great respect and affection, his own father. Perhaps one of the two people in this world he loved most was his mother and his father. And his father did not protect him from the harsh words of Suruchi. Therefore, he was an accomplice to this offense. And more than the harsh words of Suruchi, Dhruva Maharaj was devastated by the silence of his father. How very much intricate are the emotional dealings within this world. Uttanapada did not say anything, and by not saying anything, he was the cause of the greatest miserable condition inflicted upon his young son. Because Uttanapada was attached. He was really a victim of circumstances. This is the way this world is. Victims make other people victims. Uttanapada was not a bad person. He himself was a great Vaishnava and a great personality. But he was put in a momentary condition. And we see how just making the wrong decision in a split moment, that's all you have. All he had was a few seconds to make his decision of what to do or what not to do. And it was a very bewildering situation for him. But somehow or other, he made the wrong choice in that few seconds of an emergency crisis that just came upon him unexpectedly. And look at what damage it created to another person's life. That is the nature of the world. And this is happening in Satyayuga. How much more intensified is this phenomena in the age of Kali? So here is the king. It was just an ordinary day. He was sitting on his throne like he did so many times before. And like so many times, one of his sons is on his lap. And his other son comes running to get on the lap. Everything just seemed so like any other time. But then Suruchi, due to her envy, she was overcome by the modes of material nature. And she chastised Dhruva Maharaj. You have no right to sit on the lap of your father. You are not born of my womb. And Uttanapada Maharaj, he was just innocent. Just taken by surprise. If he were to say, shut up, Suruchi. Don't you speak like that to my son. Then Suruchi would have been very, very upset with him. Because she was young, she was beautiful, she was his favorite wife in certain ways. So he didn't want to spoil the relationship he had with his wife. And at the same time, he didn't want to agree with her and break the heart of his son. So he was kind of in a bewildered state. He just didn't say anything. And by not saying anything, Dhruva Maharaj interpreted that my father is not defending me, therefore he's part of this. He's part of the insult. He's the greatest part of the insult. Thus, he wanted a kingdom greater than his father. There was a sense of revenge, not due to envy, but due to broken heart. So this is condition, and we must learn from this story very carefully. How very careful we have to be, how conscious we must try to be at every given moment. Because at the least expected moment, we can say something or do something, or not say something or not do something, that could utterly devastate another person and implicate us in horrible karmic consequences. The reality is that in this material world, these kinds of circumstances are thrust upon us time and again. So how conscious we have to be. How spiritually strong we must keep ourselves at every moment. How well our discrimination must be. When you're in the battlefield, in the front lines, the enemy can attack from any side, with any weapon, in any way. And people know that one of the best military strategies is to attack by surprise. When the enemy is least aware, least expecting, and least prepared, at that time you can do a tremendous amount of damage. And that is how Maya tries to overcome us. That is how Maya tries to overcome our society. Srila Prabhupada has said that Maya, when she attacks from without, she cannot destabilize our society of Vaishnavas. But when we allow her to attack from within, she can create great havoc. Actually, she cannot create great havoc within unless we allow her to do so. And what is that havoc? She somehow or other, by her determined efforts, causes us to neglect the standards of purity in our own lives. Srila Prabhupada told, we must chant 16 rounds every day. We must very carefully follow the regulative principles of freedom. We must avoid offenses. Another way she attacks within is by causing devotees to create offenses to each other, which causes disruption in relationships, distrust, disunity. She attacks people's false egos so that people become enemies due to separate, independent, personal interests. Then there is devastation. And we become so much concerned about defending ourselves from other devotees, or attacking other devotees, that we have practically any time to actually perform the real mission of Guru and Gauranga, which is to unitedly approach the conditioned souls and give them the chance to be Krishna conscious. There is countless living entities that are suffering due to ignorance. It was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada and our Acharya's desire that we approach them and give them the chance. As we have been approached and we have been given a chance and our life has been transformed, the only way we can even attempt to repay our debt is by sharing the mercy we have received with others. But if our spiritual standards are diminished by spiritual laziness or falling back into our previous conditioned attachments, then we have no potency. Or even if we are spiritually performing our sadhana nicely, if we are inattentive in our relationships with other Vaishnavas and we allow Maya to create separate interests and fighting and distrust, then we suffer and the world suffers. For what? For nothing worth anything. So how careful we have to be. how spiritually strong we must be, because Maya will attack. Spiritually strong by chanting the holy name sincerely, and by hearing about Krishna in the association of devotees and reading our Guru Maharaj's books, Srila Prabhupada, because he is explaining all the dangers and how to deal with them. If we have if our discrimination power is strong, and our hearts are fixed in our sadhana, in our service attitude, then however Maya attacks from within, we will help each other, we will shelter each other, we will serve each other, we will not fight with each other. One little incident of inattentiveness can create such havoc. This little inattentiveness, and all Uttanapada had was a couple seconds to deal with the situation. Dhruva Maharaj came to go on his lap. His mother chastised him. Uttanapada didn't want to hurt Dhruva, didn't want to hurt his wife, didn't say anything. It was only a matter of seconds. And Dhruva Maharaj looked up at him, and Uttanapada was actually bewildered. He didn't know what to do, so he didn't help him. Within those seconds, Dhruva Maharaj's heart was cracked into pieces, and he ran away, devastated. Left home to go to the forest after a break from that little inattentiveness of Uttanapada. What was the consequence? Dhruva Maharaj was devastated. His own little 5-year-old son, Suniti, his co-wife, was devastated. The whole kingdom was devastated. Little Dhruva was prince. He left home. And Uttanapada, probably more than anybody, was devastated. We read this in the pages of Bhagavatam. He lamented so bad because he considered it was all his fault. He would do anything to get his son back, but he didn't know where to find him. So much suffering, so much pain, so much commotion. All on the basis of an apparently impossible situation. If he were to take the side of Dhruva, he would have created wrath within his wife, which he didn't want to live with that, obviously. And if he took the side of his wife, he would have broken the tender little 5-year-old heart of Dhruva. So he didn't say anything. I guess it's easier to deal with hurting your son than your wife. At least that's what it appeared to him. Wife could really make your life miserable. Son, it doesn't appear he could do that much to you. But actually, he made his life the most miserable. So some wrong discrimination. But not due to ill motives. Uttanapada simply loved Dhruva Maharaj. There was nothing in his heart except love and affection for his son. But he was put in a very, very impossible situation. And because he did not behave properly, what incredible reactions came. So Dhruva Maharaj, with the blessings of his mother, entered the forest all alone. But because he went to the forest looking for God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narada Muni appeared. And due to the blessings and instructions of Narada, everything that was inauspicious became auspicious. What became the greatest liability was transformed into the ultimate, most auspicious asset. What was the greatest source of pain became the road by which one can achieve, they all achieved the greatest happiness. So even if mistakes are made, if we somehow or other deal with that situation under the guidance of a great soul like Narada Muni, everything can be completely transformed. Actually, if Dhruva Maharaj was not insulted, he would just have been a nice king. He would not be glorified in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the miserable, unavoidable conditions that may happen within our life can be the stepping stones to the highest perfection if we simply learn how to deal with them under the guidance of great souls. Narada Muni told Dhruva Maharaj to constantly chant the holy names, to always meditate on the Lord within his heart, to worship the deity of the Lord. In this way, he taught him the process of devotional service. And because Dhruva Maharaj followed these principles of devotional service, he became infinitely more happy in that forest, feeling the ecstatic love of God within his heart, than he could have ever been sitting on the throne of his father. Ultimately, his brother, his stepmother, his mother, his father, the whole kingdom, and the entire planet Earth derived the greatest benefits because at the time of crisis and need, he accepted the guidance of his spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada is explaining herein that Dhruva Maharaj had such an intense passion. Passion to have power, authority, wealth. He was willing to perform such severe austerities because for the sake of getting material power and wealth. But due to the purification that took place by chanting the names of the Lord and remembering his lotus feet, he became purified. Thus we find this extraordinary transformation in his life. Hari Bhakti Sudodaya presents this beautiful prayer where Lord Narayan appears to Dhruva Maharaj face to face and offers Dhruva Maharaj that I will fulfill your desire. You want a kingdom greater than your father and grandfather? I will give you. With all the wealth, all the facilities that such a kingdom provides. Dhruva Maharaj did not want it. I was looking for broken pieces of glass in the form of material acquisition. But I have been given the most rare jewel of your darshan, of your love. He had no desire. Even when Kuvera, the treasurer of the heavens, offered him any benediction, he only desired to remember the Lord in every situation in the spirit of the servant of the servant of his servants. Greatest wealth, greatest treasure, Lord Vishnu gave him that benediction, that he would always remember him in pure unalloyed love. But yet the Lord mysteriously told Dhruva Maharaj to go back home and become the king. And after he leaves his kingdom, after he leaves this earthly planet, he will go to a higher planet, Dhruvaloka, the center of the universe, which is like a Vaikuntha planet within this world. So here we find in today's verse that Dhruva Maharaj, he followed the Lord's instruction. He went back home. There was a great celebration to welcome him home. If it wasn't for the disaster that took place, how different the world would be. Dhruva Maharaj came home every day, and there was no big festival and celebration. But this time when he came home, the entire city was decorated to welcome him, royal welcome, due to the mistakes that Uttanapada Maharaj made and the guilt of his heart. He wanted to make it up to Dhruva in every possible way. He was weeping, he was crying. He was willing to do anything and everything for his son. And even the stepmother Saruchi, seeing how her words actually afflicted Dhruva Maharaj, she wasn't expecting him to react like that. Even she was devastated. When he came home, everyone welcomed him with such a royal reception. And after some time, he was made king. And Uttanapada, who was also a great rishi, he left the world to go into the forest. It wasn't that now my son is king, this is the best part of my life, retirement. In this material world, when people retire, what they hope to do is now, throughout my life, I'm working so hard with so many anxieties to facilitate the comforts of life. But when I retire, what golden years that will be. Then I can enjoy all the same comforts, I can enjoy all the same facilities, and I don't have to do any work. Children will do all the work. Yes, that's what people look forward to. Of course, it's old age is miserable. Body's falling apart. Mind does not work properly. Very, very difficult. Death is approaching second by second. And as we get older, we become more conscious of this reality. The reality is there from the time of birth, that every second death is coming closer and closer and closer. And we don't know when that time will come. Death is such a personality that he can appear to us at any moment, even by surprise. But for sure, he's coming. As we get older, we become more aware and conscious of the reality that I'm dying. It's a fact. And old people like to try to give wisdom to young people. But young people, they just can't conceive or believe of this reality that I'm dying. So much play, so much fun, so much passion of making a life for ourselves. So this is the situation. People in today's society, they really, really try to prepare for retirement. In some countries, they have social security, where a segment of your, from the day you start working at the age of 14 or 15 years old or 16 years old, from the day you get a job, a portion of your money is taken by the government into social security. This is the system in America. And what is that social security? That when you get old, you start getting your money. When you retire, you get your money back little by little. So it's an investment. And there is insurance policies. And here in India, the insurance really is your family. That you raise children, and you give them so much, and you're working so hard and performing such intense austerities, and somehow or other you get a home, and you have food, and you have facilities, and you have comforts, and you have medical requirements, and all of these other things. And then when you retire, you just enjoy and let everybody else do the work. That is material goal. But here we find Maharaj Uttanapada. He did all the work. And as soon as, how did he retire? He gave everything to Dhruva Maharaj and he left for the forest, taking nothing with him. Voluntarily. Wasn't he was kicked out? Wasn't his family member said, "You old rascal, get out of this place. It's time for vanaprast." They were, sometimes family members would like to do that to their old parents. Because when people get old, they can be very, very obnoxious. But Uttanapada, no. I have done my service. Now, my service is to leave it all behind. As an example to the world. And that's exactly what he did. He left everything. Then Dhruva Maharaj became king. And what a great king he was. There is the nice narration in Srimad Bhagavatam about when the Yakshas attacked and killed his brother. There's many lessons in that story, but one lesson is he wasn't just a kind of Vaishnav king that just sat home in his palace just doing his bhajan. He did his bhajan, but a very integral part of his bhajan was his duty. He was dutiful. He had to perform the dharmic obligations of a king. He was always alert and prepared to risk his life, to fight, to defend his citizens. King is like father for all the citizens of the kingdom. The father has such responsibilities. So this is Vaishnava. Vaishnava is dutiful. Whatever responsibilities, whatever activities are required in the service of Sri Guru and Krishna, a devotee is never lazy, is willing to stand up and perform that work. And this was Srila Prabhupada's expectation of all of his devotees. To be duty-bound, to sense responsibilities and obligations and to fulfill them in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was very much disturbed out of his compassion. If devotees, in the name of being transcendental, neglected their prescribed duties. If the devotees, in the name of being detached, did not systematically, deliberately, and very conscientiously perform their prescribed duties, Prabhupada did not consider this detachment. Prabhupada considered this laziness. Krishna tells in Gita that laziness and egoism are two great enemies on the path of bhakti. What is the purpose of our sadhana? To please Krishna. That's all. There's no other reason. We chant the holy names, we read the shastras, we do bhajans and kirtans because it pleases Krishna. If it doesn't please Krishna, it will not have any spiritual effect in your life. Why does it please Krishna? Because Krishna has told us to do it. But if the spiritual masters and the great Vaishnavas give us particular duties, especially in the preaching mission of the Lord, obligations, when we take vows of marriage, there are obligations. When we take vows of initiation, there is obligations. These obligations must be served very, very conscientiously. Srila Prabhupada was so much grateful when he saw a devotee was really seriously willing to take his duties in Krishna consciousness, his responsibilities for devotional service, very seriously. That was his own life. His Guru Maharaj told him to take the message of Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya and bring it to the world in the English language. He was in Vrindavan doing nice bhajan, but he felt duty-bound to the obligation of carrying out the orders and the expectations of his spiritual master. And how much trouble, how much difficulty he underwent for him to sit in the holy land of Vrindavan and just hear and chant and remember Krishna and the association of devotees. That would have been laziness. It would have been sense gratification. That was his understanding. Because he had an obligation his guru had given him. And he did it. So in this way, Dhruva Maharaj ruled the kingdom. With a very, very mature sense of duty. Knowing that this would please Krishna. Because actually, the real spirit of a Rajarishi is a preacher. We have to preach by our words, we have to preach by our example. He maintained his position as king to preach. Directly or indirectly, to elevate people's consciousness to pure devotional service. And at a certain stage, when he could best preach by leaving it all behind, he entered into the forest. This glorious verse that we are pondering upon today is very crucial to understand for our own spiritual salvation. Dhruva Maharaj didn't see the material world as an illusion. He saw it as Krishna's creation. He saw that it could all be used for Krishna's service. However, he also understood that they were manifestations of illusory energy. One way we can understand illusory energy is, although everything around is real, illusory energy, it appears to be something it is not. It appears to be something that is mine, that I could enjoy. That is an illusion. The fact is, it is temporary, it is a manifestation, it's meant for Krishna. For Krishna's service, that is real. The illusory aspect of the energy is the misconception that is thrust upon us if we are inattentive. And it's very, very powerful. Janasya moho yamaha mameti These ideas of I and mine are the foundational principles of all suffering. They are illusion. Because I am not this body. And things in relationship to this body are not mine. That idea is an illusion. The body is not an illusion. The facilities of the world are not an illusion. But the misconception, not seeing it in relationship to Krishna, that is an illusion. If you see a snake, if you see a rope as a snake, that misconception is an illusion. It's not a snake, it's a rope. But the rope is real and the snake is real. Therefore, it is the illusory energy. We do not see Srila Prabhupada or Acharya as calling it the illusion energy. It's the illusory energy. Because it is an energy that creates misconceptions that are illusion. So Dhruva Maharaj, he saw that his kingdom, his family, everything was products of the illusory energy. They were all temporary. They were all meant to be utilized in devotional service. And he was very dutiful in his obligations to his family, his kingdoms, his palace, his pleasure grounds, and everything else. Because it was his service to Krishna. But they're all temporary. They all have a beginning and an end. They are facilities to be used by the soul to serve Krishna. But ultimately they will all vanish. So therefore we should not be attached to the facilities we have to use to serve Krishna. We should be attached to the service and the affection toward God and his devotees. We should be attached to that. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest in the Himalayas, known as Badrikashram. Srila Dhruva Maharaj left everything behind. But actually, what did he leave behind? Nothing was his, so really he had nothing to renounce. When he went to the forest, he was completely full in Krishna consciousness. So this is the transformation that takes place when a person becomes a Vaishnava. His whole conception of the values of reality totally change. And we can understand, to some extent, how we are making spiritual progress by how our values in life are being transformed. Before we ever met devotees, what were we longing for? What were we striving for? What did we take very seriously? And what did we ignore? Yanisha Sarvabhutanam. Like night and day, we will find we change. Now we're longing for the things that we neglected, and we're neglecting the things that we used to long for. And even if we're attached to things, it used to be our desire to simply develop our attachments and fulfill our attachments. And now our consciousness is we're trying to become free from our attachments. Now we are seeing what used to be our friends as far as our material desires as our worst enemies. Such great transformation. One of the great epitome examples of transformation is Dhruva Maharaj. Before he met his guru in the Vaishnavas, he had such a determined longing for kingdom and power. And by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga, Dhruva Maharaj, here, he has absolutely not the slightest trace of attachment for any of it, even though he has it. And it's not just his words. Anybody can say that I have all this, but I'm not attached. Hare Krishna. And everybody does say that. Actually, I have all this, and I have all that, and I have, but I really am not attached at all to any of it. But be careful if you say that, because Krishna hears you in your heart. And Krishna, ultimately, anything you say, Krishna will, in due course of time, make you live up to your words. I have seen it many, many times. One very graphic example is the community I was living in. Everyone decided I must take sannyas. I decided I didn't. I was happy as a brahmachari. Brahmachari is such a nice life. So much burden if you become a sannyasi. Brahmachari is very nice. So the leader of the community was, the whole GBC unanimously agreed I should take sannyas. And they were so much telling me, I must do. In fact, on Narasingha Chaturdasi of this year, it was 20 years ago. So there was so much aggression against me. That is my interpretation. You must do it, so many reasons. And I was so well prepared with various Shastra quotes of why I shouldn't do it. And finally, when the leaders could not convince me, they decided to bring all the leaders of the community to convince me. It was a whole room full of people, all chastising me and preaching to me. And one person, very powerful person, God brother, he just came right in front of everybody. There was 30 people in the room, all the leaders of the community, largest community in the world at that time of devotees. He just put his finger right in my face and said, if you don't take sannyas, then you have committed a great offense to the whole parampara. I said, well, you're a grihastha with a wife and children. What do you know about taking sannyas? I said, why don't you take sannyas? So he screamed at me right in the face. He screamed at me, because you are being ordered to take sannyas. I have not been ordered to take sannyas. So I couldn't argue with that. Anyways, ultimately, you see what happened to me. I surrendered. But that person who did that person who said, he said, because you are ordered to take sannyas, I have not been ordered to take sannyas. If I was ordered, I would do it too. He said that. A few years later, the person's wife left him. That happens in America from time to time. You may have read the news or something about this. So his wife left him. So the same leader that ordered me to take sannyas ordered him to take sannyas. And he left the Krishna consciousness movement and never came back, because he just couldn't do it. So one realization I got from that is what you tell others to do, Krishna will hold you responsible. What you speak, Krishna will make you live up to it in due course of time. You say, I'm not attached to any of these things. Haribo, Krishna's listening. All your god brothers may say, oh, such a great soul, he's not attached to anything. And all the god sisters are saying, oh, he's some sort of grihastha sannyasi, look at this. But Krishna's in your heart. Ah, you have said that. I heard it. I know everything past, present, and future. And at the most critical time, I will hold you to this. Hare Krishna. And he will. So Dhruva Maharaj, he is showing by his example. He left home without even the slightest pain because he knew it would please Krishna. And even if there is pain, a devotee is willing to endure it if it's the best way he can serve Krishna. We should try to rise above our own personal, individual, egoistic, sensual, mental pleasures and pains and orchestrate our decisions and our actions in life in such a way that we please Krishna. That is the path of true dharma. That is why this sacred story of Dhruva Maharaj is one of the most important narrations of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because of the example of Dhruva Maharaj and the transformation that took place in his life through practicing bhakti, even Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was Srimati Radharani, Krishna, enjoying the love of Sri Radha, the very personification and fountainhead of all devotion. When he would hear Gadadhar Pandit read the story of Dhruva Maharaj, after the whole story began and ended, he would ask him to repeat it. Over 100 times consecutively, he would taste the nectar of this story. Because it is a story of pure love. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You said that if we do not do our duty and chant and you gave the example of Prajna Prabhupada, then it is our sense gratification.
Speak clearly, please.
Yeah, you said that if we neglect our duty and do chanting, say come to the temple, by neglecting our duties, then we are actually not doing service, we are lazy actually. You gave the example of Prabhupada, if he would not have come to West. So sometimes we find that we may go on some extreme, it's very difficult, becomes difficult to draw lines. We are students, we have studies, so many projects. We see, oh, if I have to do my project best, my counselor, he wants me to study very well, so I may not come to temple in that sense. I say, oh, I have to do this so very good, I may not come far. So I mean to say that somewhere you have to draw a line that okay, I will go to the temple and I will do my studies so that so both are not affected. So how to draw the line somewhere? That is my question.
Our first duty is to be Krishna conscious. Our first duty is to chant the holy names, to hear the glories of the Lord, to associate with devotees of the Lord. That is the foremost duty of our life. That is the prominent duty that must be upheld under all circumstances. We have other services which are imparted through the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. Because we are living in a society and we have obligations to help others become Krishna conscious in this society. Whether we are brahmacharis, grihastas, vanaprastas, or sannyasis, brahmins, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras, we have duties to others to help them to follow the path of devotional service. As far as where to draw the lines, we have to use our good intelligence and we have to very sincerely fortify our intelligence with the guidance of senior Vaishnavas. It is very dangerous to think that you know. We find even the greatest scholars of the scriptures and even the greatest paramhamsas, out of their natural humility, they consult others. So we should consult senior devotees. We should always be eager to consult them and apply the information they give us with good intelligence to our particular circumstances. And with the guidance of Vaishnavas, there's no reason why we should ever be confused or bewildered. We'll know exactly what is to be done and what is not to be done. So we shouldn't draw the lines. In consultation with senior Vaishnavas in good standings, as well as even our peers, we can discuss with them, we could consult them, and get direction. And they will help us to draw the lines. Otherwise, if we take it upon ourselves, we will inevitably make so many mistakes. Either we will be negligent in our prescribed duties, or we'll be negligent in our sadhana. And to what extent we should perform our prescribed duties, we have to use our own good intelligence, but without the consultation of mature, seasoned Vaishnavas, we cannot trust our own intelligence. It's a symptom of false pride if we put too much trust in our intelligence, too much trust in our interpretation of the scriptures, too much trust in our interpretation of the order of the spiritual master. That could be dangerous also. The spiritual master gives us an order. How to fulfill that order? We shouldn't think that we're so great, that we're so advanced, that we're so intimate, that we alone know exactly how to carry out that order. We should be humble. We should consult others in a dutiful way. And with the blessings of Vaishnavas, blessings of the spiritual master, we'll always be protected by Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.